What makes us citizens? Being bound by a shared set of laws? Pledging allegiance to a particular flag? These might be part of the equation, but on a deeper level, citizenship is about community and takes place on the level of individual interactions. So improving our democracy might mainly be a matter of strengthening our friendships and cooperating with our neighbors. According to political theorist C.L. Skatch, author of the new book, How to Be a Citizen, Learning to Be Civil Without the State. Cindy is a professor at the University of Bologna, and she joins us now to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Cindy Skatch. I'm an author and a university professor. I've taught law and government at Harvard University, the University of Oxford, King's College London, and the University of Bologna. I spent decades researching and writing about constitutions and rights, and advising governments and lawmakers, suggesting how the right laws, the right rules, could make their democracies work. But in my new book, How to Be a Citizen, I've taken the proverbial U-turn. After reflecting on my career and my accumulated exchanges with scholars, students, lawmakers, and ordinary individuals around the world, I argue now that we should actually stop hiding behind the law and expecting it to do the heavy lifting for us. This is especially true if we want to live in peaceful, democratic societies with true citizens. Now, my book is going to seem heretical and provocative coming from a law professor, but mostly I would like you to know that this book is an invitation. I'm asking you to come on a journey with me and to question your current beliefs about what it means to be a good citizen and whether the law can actually help. To give you a taste of what this collaboration might involve, here are five key insights from my book. 1. A guilty bystander is a thing. The contemporary American idea of a citizen was vividly parodied in an episode of the sitcom Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld and his friends, while visiting a suburban town, joked and laughed as they watched a stranger being robbed. When police arrived and found them laughing, they were arrested for criminal indifference. Shocked and confused, they contacted a lawyer who argued their innocence by claiming that bystanders are by definition innocent. The lawyer went on to complain in court that the police were trying to change nature and create a whole new animal, the guilty bystander. Well, indeed, this is exactly what some ancient Romans intended to do, and what we should be doing now if we care about a true idea of citizenship. Humanitas and pietas and the direct care of our communities have lost way to the idea that the law will solve problems and help those in need, and that citizenship is simply state membership, a status given to us by the state, binding us in a vertical relationship with it. This is such an impoverished, minimal definition of citizen. And if we are to actually thrive in our communities, we need to bring back some of the ancient ideas that saw citizenship as being both a member of a state and a horizontally connected member of a community, where the virtues of generosity and humanity, not individualism, reign. So yes, Jerry, a guilty bystander is a thing. 2. Leadership isn't everything, and it may even be nothing. It seems banal to say that there are good and bad leaders. Throughout history, we have certainly had examples of both. But what about if there were no leaders? Or at the very least, if we didn't put all of our eggs in the leaders' baskets, what would that do to our ability to act and take responsibility for ourselves? And how would it encourage us to look after members of our communities? We saw some of the best examples of this non-leadership action during the pandemic, when mutual aid communities delivered medicines and food to people in quarantine, while governments were still bickering over the value of face masks. Or let's go back even further in time to Notting Hill, London, in the 1970s. Here, at number 8, All Saints Road, the Mongrove Restaurant, a local community of immigrants, mainly from the West Indies, was repeatedly targeted and raided by police. 9 members of this community, who peacefully protested such treatment, were arrested on charges of conspiracy to incite a riot. As the trial of these 9 approached, outraged locals spontaneously began what they called a public education campaign to raise awareness of racism and bring immediate attention to the trial. When I reached out to the official photographer of this community, Jamaican-born Neil Kenlock, Mr. Kenlock said that nobody told them to do it, but they knew each other and they understood. Each person, as he put it, was looking in the same direction. Eventually, the trial ended with the presiding judge acknowledging for the first time racial prejudice and wrongdoing in the London Metropolitan Police. We need only think about how these examples resonate with current protests across university campuses. Let's think about it. Leadership isn't everything, and it may even be nothing. 3. We all need a piazza. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean sunning ourselves in a chair directly outside of an Italian gelateria. It might, but it could more likely mean showing up regularly at a skateboard park in Birmingham, or helping plant trees in a communal orchard in Oxford, or having a drink at Sam's Bar in Boston where everybody knows your name. Because the piazza is an Italian square, yes, but at the heart of the idea, one that dates from ancient architectural history and theory, is the creation of a place where people are free to come together regularly to exchange something that matters to them. It's a marketplace for ideas and a forum. And the spaces that I am calling piazza are any accessible places where we feel comfortable showing up regularly to spend time together. Because it is here that we can build what scholars such as Bob Putnam refer to as social capital, the social networks and the norms of reciprocity and trustworthiness that come from our social connection. And it is also the place where citizens can form something else, common knowledge. We can know something and also know that others know it too. Now, this is important because coordinating is a complex thing, even with all of our social media apps today. And without coordination, cooperation is really difficult too. If repressive dictatorships impose curfews and prohibit associational life, it is often to prevent exactly that kind of common knowledge, coordination, and cooperation that helped the Berlin Wall fall and that helped raise the awareness of domestic abuse in Mexico. So go ahead and find your piazza, make a new friend, and see what good community you can build. 4. Bigger is not better. Robin Dunbar and other evolutionary psychologists have spent decades trying to understand the optimal size of stable social networks. Looking across time and space, from hunter-gatherers to historical English villages and social media platforms, Dunbar's research suggests that the average size of a stable social network is 150. And the innermost circle, that associated with physical and mental well-being and stable friendship, is only about 5. So somewhere between 150 and 5, we have a good working number for our piazzas, for forming stable associations that matter. If some scholars and public intellectuals are calling for scaling up, for internet democracy and large-scale constitutions for the world or for Mars, I am calling for scaling down, for a size that our neurological substrates can handle. Scaling up beyond this risks moving away from exactly the kind of face-to-face local organization that matters in this book and that makes democracy really work. But there is a caveat. Diversity also matters here, too. We do not want homogeneous and exclusive parochial enclaves of 5, because other research in both the social and natural sciences shows us that we are willing to cooperate with those who are different from us, even sometimes across species, if we need to and we try. So small is best, but only when it is inclusive and accepting of our diversity. 5. Start this, age 3. It is no coincidence that when you walk into one of the local government-run preschools of Reggio Emilia in Italy, you find yourself in a mini version of an ancient city, with a piazza deliberately placed in the center. Here, children aged 3 to 6 are invited to mix and mingle in the open space, exchanging words and initiating play, observing one another, simply. When I visited some years ago, Two boys in high heels and pink boas emerged from the piazza together to observe me, then returned to their important work. For here in this educational model, the emphasis is not on reading proficiency or numeracy at this young age, but on becoming the citizen, the engaged colleague in the piazza. Not unlike the kindness curriculum designed at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the emphasis is not on individual academic progress, but on connection, that subjective sense of care for the other. So simple and yet so profound, this early years educational model that begins with the idea of the embodied citizen, one that cares first and foremost, not about stickers and achievement, but kindness and connection, must happen. Research again shows us that where these ideas have been brought into schools or other spaces, either informally or in a more structured way, both through physical spaces that enable rather than constrain, and teachers that do the same, we see positive externalities, less bullying, a reduction in crime in the broader community, and more community cohesiveness. This is what I refer to as a deep education, and it needs to start at about age 3. The rest of the book is full of examples from my travels and research around the world, from the courts in Africa to the flea markets in Moscow. It's full of data and research, both my own and that of giants whose shoulders I stand on. I am not suggesting for a moment that anyone run and break the law or ignore the law. I'm glad it's there for us, but I strongly feel that we should not be hiding behind it. Laws should be the understudies in our dramas, not the main players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Cindy. That was 5 big ideas from How to Be a Citizen, Learning to Be Civil Without the State by C.L. Sketch. Also, check out our book bite for Democracy in Retrograde, How to Make Changes Big and Small in Our Country and in Our Lives by Sammy Sage and Emily Amick. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.